Let's explore what it means to be well.
From meditation, stress management, safer substance use, and sexual health, we will literally talk sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Join us to dive deep into some student health questions. We'll learn about wellness together, try some coping tools, and meet some interesting people.
Your co-hosts, Heather and Craig,
the perfect blend of Campus Health and Wellness Center and Sal's.
Each week, we'll DIY a wellness tool together
and then nerd out and dig into the science behind how it works.
Email your health and wellness related questions to wellpod@durhamcollege.ca to be discussed anonymously on air.
Welcome
to the Wellpod at DC.
Welcome to the Wellpod at DC from Media Hub on riotradio.ca. We look a little bit different today. We're wearing headphones, and we encourage our listeners and viewers to do the same today, because today we are talking about music. Music gives a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and life to everything, as Plato once said. So our student question that led us to this topic this week is, I love listening to music when I'm not feeling good. It seems to make me feel better. Does music help our mental health? So today we're going to dive a little bit into what music is, some theories of its origins and purpose, and something called free zone. We're also going to learn a little bit about vibration again, a continuation from our vibes talk last week. So we'll explore a little bit about the healing vibrations. So we'll talk about things like sound baths and subwoofers. And then we'll also end today in link with that, talking about binaural beats, what they are, the science behind them. So it's going to be a fun episode. So what is music? What are some of the theories of its origins and its purpose? So in Latin, it is art of the muses, is what music means. And some definitions state that music is the art of arranging sound to create expressive content. And I thought this was a really interesting way to define music. According to Britannia, music is the art concerned with combining vocals or instrumental sounds for beauty or for emotional expression. And that's really what we're going to be focusing on a little bit today. Culturally, what we see is it's universal. In fact, there's some beliefs that our brain is actually wired for music. And we see it in all aspects of human societies and all time periods. Any guesses on how old the oldest musical instrument is that has been found? Any guesses how old? 40,000 years old. There is a flute that was made, that they have found, called the Divy Babe Flute. It's made of bear femur. That they believe is about 40,000 years old. Hard to tell if its purpose was truly a flute, but that is what current beliefs are. So we see music in all cultures, in all time periods. American musician Billy Joel once said that he thinks music itself is healing. It's an explosive expression of humanity, and it's something we are all touched by, no matter what culture we come from. There's a little bit of a disagreement in the science world, anthropology world, on if music developed after, before, or coincidingly alongside language. And what's interesting, I don't know how much you're going to tap into this today, is there's an area of our brain that reacts to music that is the same for speech processing, the temporal lobe. So something's happening there. Some other guesses, some other theories on music and its purpose. Could it be a form of sexual selection? So kind of like mating calls. And it reminds me of the movie Rio 2. Any Rio 2 watchers in the room? There's a scene about halfway through to the song Beautiful Creatures. Highly recommend you listen to it. And it's very much around this idea of the bird remembers the music, remembers the song. And another bird says, well, it's in your blood. It's who we are. We also are wondering if music was kind of created as a purpose to help with organized labor. So if you think about ships, for instance, there was often a drum that we're finding on really old Viking ships, for instance, where they're always noticing that there's this drum that was there to help with the coordinated labor. And we see this in other areas of labor as well, how music may have helped influence this kind of organized labor movement. We also see it in a lot of religious and spiritual ceremonies as well. And we're wondering if it's not only just a way to communicate with the divine, but it was a way of connection. I attended a funeral recently in which the Lord's Prayer was sung and some other hymns as well. And it was incredible to see how much it pulled together 200-300 people in a room. And the last theory that I kind of really loosely started to dive into is some beliefs and some theories around music is its purpose was also for infant and maternal communication. And so there's something to be said about the way that we nurture through music infants and young children. And it's a pentatonic scale, which means it's five octaves. I'm not a music major, but it's a specific scale of notes, a specific scale for music. Think of, for instance, Amazing Grace. Could you hum Amazing Grace?
Not when put on the spot.
Right? So it's this very kind of, for lack of a better word, simple, not necessarily basic. Or a more recent example of this scale is Better Together by Jack Johnson, if you're familiar with that tune, right? So there is something here, if you think about when you're holding children, many of us just kind of unknowingly start to hum or sing. So we're not necessarily clear on its purpose and its origins, but we know it's been around for a very long time and is a central component of many of our human functioning. Is it healing, though? And why do we feel human, or not human, but why do we feel emotional reactions often when we are listening to music? Have you had an emotional connection, a reaction to music before?
For sure. And all over, we've talked about this before in terms of, you know, there's happy songs you listen to for happiness, songs you listen to that have a certain cadence and so on that, you know, when I'm frustrated, sad, whatnot, and the song kind of ties into that, right? Yeah, it
takes you back to experiences, different emotions that you perhaps have felt. Or I really like the connection with music and film. If you ever listen or don't listen, if you turn the music off, the soundtrack off, and watch the scene, completely different feelings and emotions can sometimes bubble out, right? My favorite in Jurassic Park is the classic Jurassic Park theme song. We played it at our wedding because it just has such an emotional hit to it. So what's happening here with music and emotions? Barbara Ellis from the American Music Therapy Association states that the elements of music, such as rhythm and melody, are echoed in our physiological functioning and human being capabilities. And research by McGill in 2011 found that music actually increases our dopamine, which I think, Craig, you're going to talk a little bit more about today in some form, which may be why it's being seen as effective in stress management and with our anxiety. And in fact, this research that McGill did in 2011 found that it is actually music is more effective than prescription medication in lowering anxiety prior to surgeries. Right, that's really interesting to think about. Something's happening perhaps with our opioid receptors there, but it's more effective than prescription medication in lowering anxiety prior to surgeries. Brunel University in the UK also looked at music reducing pain and anxiety, but they looked more post-surgery, and they found that individuals in post-surgery that used music as part of that healing required less pain medication and actually recovered sooner and quicker than those that did not listen to music. And it was most effective when you chose your own music. So it kind of speaks to what you were saying earlier about some songs and some music you've noticed a specific emotional reaction to. It might be different than mine.
For sure.
And so this is what's making research in music and medicine really complicated, is that for many of us, research is very much tied to personal associations. So a song that you're listening to that you think is actually uplifting and more upbeat, I may be thinking, Craig, why are you listening to such a sad song right now?
For sure, for sure. And even something I'll mention later, but culturally, right? Sort of, you know, growing up in Western culture, some of the music I listened to, someone else would listen to and say, this is not energizing, or just what you're saying, right? Would get a totally different feel, I guess, from it than what I might.
Absolutely. So we're going to do another little activity to see how music makes us feel. And we're going to see if it aligns with what the research is indicating this type of music, the emotion it should evoke. So I really recommend earphones for this. If you're listening, pause and go and grab a pair of headphones if you're watching this after our live broadcast here on riotradio.ca. And also to enhance this activity, I brought some scrap pieces of paper if you'd like to do this. So grab a piece of paper and a pen. And what I encourage you to do as we play these clips of music, if you're comfortable, close your eyes. And I want you to draw how the music is making you feel. So we're going to use a little bit of our kind of imagination here. And what we're going to do, kind of is utilizing our imaginal sense, is if you're drawing your line, you want it to represent how you're feeling, how the music is making you feel, as close as possible. But don't put too much thought into it. Just let your pen move across the paper. And we're going to be listening to about 6 different clips of music. And so after each one, if you want to kind of flip your page over or move your line down, we'll maybe see if our lines look different according to how the different emotions are evoked. So our first song is The Arrival of the Queen of Sheba by George Frideric Handel. Try to guess what type of emotion this was trying to evoke as you draw your line. All right, listeners, Craig, what emotion do you think research thinks this music evokes? Any guesses?
I'd say happy and excited.
Yeah, this was excited. And I'll hold my sheet of paper up. This was my line. What did your line look like? So kind of similar in that it was a very linear line.
Very quick.
Very quick.
Little jumps.
And if you're watching, you might have noticed my head bobbing quite a bit, right? There was an excitement to this. So that one we were on the same page with. This next one is Flight of the Bumblebee. Guesses, Craig and listeners? What emotion do you think that was trying to evoke? Gave you some heart palpitations, perhaps?
Yeah, I like excited, but to the nth degree of anxiety and stress.
Right? My line is a little bit more frantic there. So this research found was nervousness. This evoked nervousness. So good to see your heart is working there, Dan, and perhaps making you feel nervous. Number 3, I can't pronounce this one, but it is a Mozart song from his Requiem. Thoughts with this piece?
That's a tough one, because it changed for me once voices started, because at first I had just a really long line and it sounded kind of inquisitive in the sense of looking around and what's going on here, if that makes sense. And then it seemed a whole lot sadder when the person started to speak.
Yeah.
To sing, I should
say. A little bit of sadness there. So this was somber.
Somber.
Very similar, Craig. My line started off kind of rhythmic almost, and I always pictured someone kind of walking through empty streets.
Yeah.
But then once the voices started, right, it shifted my line. So that was somber. So this next one is The Comedian's Pantomime by an artist whose name I can unfortunately not pronounce. So check it out on our Instagram account. What emotion do you think this is? Any guesses with this one?
I'm not sure what I feel right now. Anger and disappointment in something all at once.
Ooh, yeah. My line was much sharper compared to some of the other ones.
And bigger than some of my previous ones. Just
very good representation of the music. I like that. This was, in fact, anger.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was anger.
Interesting.
Next one is Night on Bald Mountain. again, give a listen, draw a line if you'd like to participate. What emotion are you feeling?
Frantic is an emotion, but I'm feeling frantic, like frantic. Something's going on.
Yeah, something's going on. That's a good way. Don't know if you could hear that one, Eldon. Any guesses with that one?
I mean, I have the script in front of me, but listening to it, worrisome.
Worrisome. Mm-hmm. I like that word too. Mm-hmm. So this one was mischievousness. Mm. So not quite anger. Right, but I liked what you said. Like, something's going on here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Busy and frantic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our last one for this activity, Clair de Lune. What emotion do you think research says this evokes?
For me anyways, just sitting, doing nothing, looking around and enjoying.
I almost didn't want to write my pen for this one. It felt, anytime I moved my line, it felt too big of a line.
That's a good way of saying it, right?
Just, too much pressure on the page. I almost didn't want to write anything. Mm-hmm. This is calm. This is what research thinks is calm. So interesting to think about, and I chose music without lyrics purposely because sometimes it's the lyrics, the words behind music, that is really producing that emotional response. Some argue that the lyrics of music is a form of poetry, and we know poetry is an art form that cultivates a lot of emotional responses. So I highly recommend do this activity at home. Make your own playlist. When you feel an emotion with a song, I have multiple playlists. And so I have one for calm, relaxed, one when I'm wanting to feel energized for maybe studying or getting ready to go out. Maybe you have one when you're feeling angry that just kind of helps you sit in that anger, which is okay to do once in a while. So consider making some emotional playlists and sit with music and really examine how it's making you feel. Is it coming from the music? Is it coming from the noise, the sounds? Is it coming from the lyrics, the person's voice? Something really interesting for us to unpack why we're emotional often when we're listening to music. So one of the other things that we see in research is that it's not only just the lyrics or the actual instruments that are causing an emotional response, but we're seeing something else is also happening. And a publication by Johns Hopkins University, Medical University in 2022, found that listening to music actually activates more regions in our brain simultaneously than any other human activity. And we can even experience a brief moment of emotional excitement or aesthetic chills, which is a
physiological.
Thank you. That one always ties up my tongue. Psychological response called Frisson, which is French for shiver.
Yeah.
What's behind this, Craig?
Yeah. Just bouncing off of that, that's one I don't know how to pronounce either. I looked it up. It was like some Frisson.
Yeah. It's French.
It's French. But it is, as you said, otherwise known as aesthetic chills. You know, the chills you get when you're listening to a certain song or even type of songs and whatnot. Or psychogenic shivers is even fancier word than the aesthetic chills. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to, like you said, it's a psychophysiological response in the rewarding stimuli, I should say. Mm. So there's kind of two things going on there, and that's why that word is far too long. But is you have the psychological component and then the physiological component of what's happening, and it's kind of affecting two different parts of your brain/nervous system. And so the psychological component is related to the reward system of the brain and pleasurable feelings, right? And
mm-hmm.
so that's not necessarily a specific specific area, like we just pointed this as being the reward area. As we've kind of talked about over the weeks, the brain is quite complex and there's multiple things going on, and we'll talk about a few in a little bit. But that, you know, I feel good listening to this, or even maybe not feeling good, but I feel something listening to it, as we already said, the different types of music that you come across and what you end up feeling from it, right? And then there's the physiological component to it. And this is related actually to a system we've talked about, our sympathetic nervous system. Right. And so we end up with those chills that we were mentioning, right? As our sympathetic nervous system fires, or what else? Well, the goosebumps, I think we mentioned that earlier.
Yes.
Pupil dilation. Because when we mentioned during the 1 week talking about being stressful, and one of the things happens, your pupils dilate.
So we can sense out the danger, see more of what's going on.
Exactly. And so these physiological responses occur when we're listening to music, and those come together under this frizen, however you pronounce it, area of understanding for music. And so it's pretty interesting, because one of the things I came across was what stimuli actually lead to it. Obviously, here we're talking about music, and there's different aspects to the music that relate to it. Volume of music. So, you know, we tend to turn our volume higher and higher, depending on what type of music, especially, that we're listening to. But then that adds to that that feeling and those physiological reactions. But other stimuli included videos they found, poetry, which still ties to music, eloquent speeches, which kind of tie into music too. But a couple that I found interesting were finding beauty in nature and art. If you've ever gone somewhere, or you're out on a drive, and let's say in the mountains, and you come around that turn and there's the valley, and you kind of get those chills there, right? This is kind of similar response to what's going on music wise and then shout out to the other nerdy scientists that also science practice and going through the practice of science and research and discovering things. Unfortunately, it was more tied to math and physics from some of the stuff I came across, but I'll just throw biology in there as well, and we're good to go. but it's interesting, all of these different things that seem somewhat different from each other, as much as some seem to overlap, can provide that stimuli along with music. It's just so interesting how connected they all are.
Yeah, and I haven't seen any research on this, so I'm just completely going down my own rabbit hole. We talked about nuts during stress, right? Some of the stress research is novelty, something new, often produces a stress response. Stress is not bad. So I wonder if part of that on our nervous system, that stress is if we're seeing a new sunset, we're discovering a new bio-related science fact, we're listening to a new song. I wonder if there's something there with the novelty.
And this is actually perfect. You set me up well for one of the other interesting things about music, is that aspect of novelty within it.
And see, I'm a genius. I'm so
exactly,
smart.
Exactly. But related to, you know, you're listening, if you can imagine with me, you're listening to that song, and there's a certain, again, cadence, beat to it, a certain volume to it. And then all of a sudden, you know, music stops, and then a new beat comes into play. That like switch up of the beat that was unexpected
is
what kicks in and gives us that unexpected stimuli that then leads to, again, this Friesen stimuli that you know, makes us feel good about the music, or at least have feelings towards
the feelings.
But a couple of other things kind of tied to that, and we've touched upon some of it. I mentioned earlier sort of some of the cultural aspects. Some research shows it's interesting from the standpoint of, you know, not that we can group all, let's say, Western music into one group, but, you know, some of the music I listened to and how I was, you know, or not how I was raised on it, but
You were kind of introduced to and surrounded by.
Surrounded by friends, et cetera, right? Someone else listening to it, even though there's those unexpected portions, it's unexpected to me, who knows that music well, right? And so someone from another culture who's not heard that music before might listen to it and say, what's the big deal?
Yes.
And vice versa as well. Sometimes if you've ever listened to music that's not in your realm of what you tend to listen to, mm-hmm. and you listen to it and it's like, okay, that's nice. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't give you that same feeling because it's not necessarily tied to the reward center because, you know, it's not stimulating you in the same way, if you will, because of that, those memories of music and understanding of music and what usually happens as far as the sequence yes. goes and so on. So
the nostalgic foundation of music is important, perhaps.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's that. It's interesting, that sort of environmental, if you will, interplay of music in our background in terms of that.
Really interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting stuff. And so I think there was one other thing, and just to get my memory back here, is just, the parts of the brain you had mentioned, that's right. And so what parts of the brain are being stimulated here, right? And there's some really good resources out there. One that actually you shared with me while we were preparing, from the University of Central Florida, called Your Brain on Music. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage any of the listeners to go and check that out, because I was looking at it far too late to include much of it into our session today. But it was really interesting on all the different parts of our brain. It's not just, as we said, there's that one location that music and memory or whatever all happen, but all the different interplay between the different parts. And so two areas of research that I came across that were really interesting were neuroimaging studies of what's going on in the brain while you're listening to music. Mm-hmm. And what they found is that the intensity, that tingling, the goosebumps, and the intensity,
the free zone.
The chills there are again tied to those reward areas of our brain that include nucleus accumbens. I'm not sure if that I'm pronouncing that one right. Sorry, everybody. But your orbital frontal cortex and your insular cortex, and these are all these areas that are involved in like pleasurable feelings. And so they start firing when we start listening to music, especially that music that you connect with maybe more than some of the other ones. And then the other thing that was interesting, other research showing blood flow to different parts of the brain.
I saw this as well.
So not just the neural connection and firing of signals, but the flow of blood and like, okay, we don't need as much over there because now that we're listening to music, we need it in areas like the ventral striatum, the midbrain, again, the orbital frontal cortex, the really long one, ventral medial prefrontal cortex, and then a couple that we've talked about before that I find very interesting. So the amygdala.
Yes, one of your favorite words.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Right, tied to amygdala. That we talked about it in our stress podcast, right?
Yeah.
Of just when that gets heightened and it's processing emotions and so on. Well, this is now getting all kinds of blood flowing to it, because we need the blood to get the oxygen and the energy and so on to be able to process this this incoming information. And one of the things that was really interesting when you look at these parts, we haven't talked about each of them, but they're all areas involved in arousal, emotions, reward, and motivation. We kind of mentioned that, at least for the amygdala, when we talked about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're areas that are also stimulated by drugs, but then also by food, by sex. These are areas that are vital to our survival, ultimately, right? Maybe not so much the drugs, but sex and food. Like, these are imperative.
Yeah, and music.
Like, yeah. What? Right? But it's really fascinating that then it's stimulating all of those areas, and it's this biologically relevant, or these areas of the brain are biologically relevant and triggered by survival related stimuli. And as you said, music. Right?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Coming up after this music break, we're going to explore how music may not only evoke an emotional response, but what's happening with the vibrations, the frequencies of sound, how they might also be aiding in our well-being. Don't forget, you can follow us on social media at DCSA Media Hub, as well as at Wellness at DC. And our first song here, according to research, is one of the best to create frisson And so again, I recommend not playing it too high of a volume, but increase that volume perhaps just a little bit. We'll talk about ear health next week to talk about safely, safe listening volumes, but crank it up while you listen to the song. Maybe close your eyes, close off some lights, lay on your bed, and see how this makes you feel. See if you get some of those goosebumps. Here is the radio edit version of Hallelujah by Jeff Berkley.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing this floor. You know, I used to live alone before I knew you. And I've seen your flag on the marble arch, and love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah. Time when you let me know what's really going on below, but now you never show that to me, do you? But remember when I moved in you and the holy dove was moving too, and every breath we drew was hallelujah, hallelujah. It's not a cry that you hear at night. It's not somebody who's seen the light. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Beautiful song. Welcome back to WellPod at DC from Media Hub on riotradio.ca. So let's talk a little bit about the healing vibrations behind music. And I like to call this segment sound baths and subwoofers. So can vibrations heal? So sound baths are kind of a trend right now in the wellness world. Have you seen these before? Or have you seen images or pictures?
Yeah, more images and pictures, and kind of have a vague idea of what
they are and what they look like. So a lot of what I'm seeing right now, they're sometimes made of stone or crystal or metal, and there's these kind of bowl-shaped items ranging in sizes. Mm. And you might see somebody with a, I don't know the name for it, the technical name for it, but an instrument where they are rubbing the rim of the item to create a vibration. And then it goes down into the bowl and it can be kind of bellowed out. Tibetan or Himalayan singing bowls are also connected here. So a sound bath is a meditative experience where you're bathed in sound waves. We see this in things like gongs, for instance. If you've ever banged a big gong, you might have noticed how it makes you feel, the vibrations that come off of that. I mentioned singing bowls, but also human voice as well, and other instruments can create this very meditative experiences. So the idea here is that the vibrations are specific tones and frequencies that have the ability to heal your body. And there's actually some research behind it here. So this is not just kind of a hippy-dippy yogic experience. There's some science behind it. So the Journal of Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine 2016 reported that sound baths significantly decreased tension, anger, fatigue, and depression in many of the participants in the research study. And the International Journal of Psychotherapy Practices and Research also noticed these things alongside a decrease in heart rate, which they're wondering if this is why we see it reducing anxiety and stress, because it's helping to lower our heart rate. And there might also be something going on here with cortisol and dopamine once again, which we talked about earlier. The Complementary Therapies in Medicine in 2020 did a review on all of the current literature around sound bathing. And they said, given that there are few studies, there might be a potential risk of methodological bias. Do you know what this is? Could you explain it in a sentence or two?
Yeah, I think it's just there's not, because we haven't built up much, many research the research itself.
There haven't been a lot of studies, yeah.
There haven't been a lot of studies, thank you. Yeah, that it's, okay, we're maybe seeing something that's positive, but we haven't enough, you know, have we really tested every aspect of that research?
Absolutely. So they're seeing some positives, mm-hmm. but they can't recommend it as a therapeutic tool at this mm-hmm. stage because they'd like more information. But the research that they have been able to gather so far is all kind of leading in a positive path towards helping to reduce some negative health implications and actually increase relaxation. What we see as well is using sound as a form of healing dates back to all sorts of different cultures. Records of using gongs have surfaced from Egyptian and Greek and Roman times. And one of the earliest gongs that was discovered is over 16,000 years old. So we're recognizing that they might have a role here as a therapeutic aspect. However, the practices that exist today, they're saying, look substantially different than probably what they looked like in ancient times. And so the Tibetan singing bowl is perhaps not as old as some of the other techniques and more of a new age, contemporary Western or new age spiritualism tools that we're seeing a lot more now being used in sound baths. So the current theory is that the sound baths and the frequencies and vibrations that are coming from these tools or music in general, it's helping to allow our brain and our bodies to relax because it's tapping into an alpha dormant or theta dormant brain wave. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit later today about frequencies and brain waves. So something is happening there, but we don't need fancy tools for this. So you don't need a Tibetan singing bowl. You don't need these big crystal balls. We can use music, whether it's classical or your favorite artist, to try to evoke some of the healing vibrations and some of the powers of the vibrations. And one of the tools you can use that you might have access to already at home or out in public is a subwoofer. So a subwoofer is a loudspeaker that emits low frequency audio signals. We know it as bass. And this helps us physically feel the music when you go and see live music. It's one of the reasons I love live music so much is because I can feel the vibrations. And one of my favorite musicians where I've really noticed this is Xavier Rudd. Xavier Rudd is an Australian singer who does a lot of work with the local Indigenous and Aboriginal communities of Australia. He talks a lot about climate and environmental concerns and causes, and he's also known at playing multiple instruments. So he kind of started off in the streets of Australia with multiple different instruments around him, a harmonica, didgeridoo. And so the didgeridoo, it's developed by the Aboriginal peoples of Northern Australia. It's at least 1,000 years old. And it's a wind instrument where we see different vibrations and different frequencies. So we're going to play just a small clip of one of his songs. This is Lioness Eye by Xavier Rudd. I'd like you to take a listen, but try to feel the vibrations of this song. You can try once again to align it with whatever emotions are also being evoked. But for this one, I really want you just to get a sense of the physical vibrations that perhaps the song is cultivating. Here's Lioness Eye by Xavier Rudd. So what are you noticing compared to perhaps some of the more classical pieces that we listened to earlier? Does this sound different to you? Did it feel different to you?
I think maybe not different, but similar to classical pieces, is I like the various layers of the music, in the sense of the, not that I know what all sounds come from the didgeridoo,
yes,
but like the deeper, you know, sort of consistently deeper sound, and then the deviations from that. It was like kind of the deeper vibrations or deeper sound has like a calming effect. But then there's still that little, going back to our drawings, of there was still that energy.
Little surprise here and there.
And then the little surprises where you're like, okay, there's the beat. Oh, wait, it changed.
Yeah.
Right?
I highly recommend listening further into that song, as well as all of his songs. And what's really interesting about the didgeridoo is it's a very reciprocal instrument. Mm-hmm. And so the artist actually feels a lot of the vibrations within their lips and their mouth. And so it's an instrument that I'm sure Xavier also experiences, mm-hmm, as he's creating. Mm-hmm. There is another branch of sound therapy that explores the frequencies of these vibrations, and so we'll be talking about that after our musical break. They are called binaural,
you got it,
beats.
Yep.
And so we'll explore some other music as well, and be thinking about how frequencies and vibrations may play a role. But for our musical break right now, again, recommend cranking up those earphones to a safe level and pay attention to the emotions that might be being provoked. But I really want you paying attention to the vibrations, the frequency, and wait for those surprise moments. Because what we're going to do is we're going to listen to a prelude by the same artist and then play it right into their next track. And that's actually what the research recommends for these, is that you actually follow them up back to back to get more of the experience. Don't forget, you can follow us on Instagram at DCSA Media Hub, as well as at Wellness at DC. So to help get some vibrations going, here we have Prelude and Kara by Bonobo right here on riotradio.ca.
Thank you.
Welcome back to WellPod at DC from the Media Hub on riotradio.ca. So just before the song there, you mentioned the binaural beats and that we'd be talking about them here. And so I thought I'd start off with what are they? And it's actually something, full disclosure, I had not really heard about, but it was fascinating from science nerd brain figuring out what they were. And we'll get into a little bit of the science in a bit here. But just in terms of explaining to the listeners, what are they? They're an illusion created by your brain when you're listening to two different tones of two different frequencies. The two frequencies need to be just slightly different from each other. All right. And so then you have one frequency going into one ear and one frequency going into the other ear at the same time. And I think we have an image that might appear on screen here showing that, where when you have the one frequency going into the one ear, and then the other slightly different frequency from the other ear, what your brain ends up doing then is hearing a sound that is the difference between those two frequencies.
Interesting.
So I thought I would attempt, and forgive me if it's an epic fail right here, but listening to or pulling up a couple of frequencies so listeners can hear them. Yeah, you can let me know how good this sounds. But this is a frequency of 400 hertz, and I'll just do this to...
Okay.
Okay. And if I pause that and go, this is 410 hertz.
Okay.
Did you notice a difference between those two? And so what ends up happening, the one is 400 hertz and the one is 410 hertz. And I'll play one more sound here. You can listen. This is not going to be what I'm ultimately talking about, but here is the two sounds occurring at the same time. And you might hear, it's not all that comfortable sometimes, that resonance between the two, the vibration there.
It reminds me, if I'm driving in the car and my husband has his window down, but mine is open or closed, like one of the windows open and one of the closed, you get that like wobble.
Exactly, right? Yeah, the pressure difference there. And this is kind of the same thing, in that frequency difference of 400 and 410 hertz. And then that wobble is, without over explaining the physics, but they're kind of not going at the same time, the two waves. This is a little bit different, as much as when I Googled and looked on YouTube for the binaural beats, it's a little different than what ultimately it's referring to. They're occurring at the same time, but the term binaural, just because I like breaking down words, the bi is referring to two, and the oral is referring to your ears. So you're listening to one sound over here in this ear and one here of the two frequencies.
Interesting.
But then the interesting thing is, if you will, the illusion that your brain creates, as I said, is it's listening or hearing a 10 hertz vibration.
The difference kind of between the two.
Yeah, the 410 minus the 400, and now you have this wave that is 10 hertz as opposed to either one of the two. And so what's going on here is, when sound goes in your ears, and we'll get into a little bit more about the ears working next week, but the signals that go in there go to a part of your brain called the superior olivary complex. It's in your pons and your midbrain, kind of back there, if you will. And so then it processes and comes up with this, okay, it's a 10 hertz sound that we're listening to. And then we can listen to different sounds that end up, the difference ends up at different frequencies. So we're talking 10 hertz for the sounds that we're listening to. But in terms of the two different sounds, you end up with a difference that might be 4 hertz, it might be 15 hertz, and so on. But what's really neat is the brain, the waves of our brain waves, end up actually kind of matching that 10 hertz, 15 hertz, 4 hertz, whatever it happens to be. And so there are a number of brain wave types that we have. So I think you mentioned some of them already.
Alpha,
beta, gamma, theta, delta. And these are all then tied to different frequencies that are the 10 hertz, the 15 hertz, the 4 hertz. For example, delta would be the brain waves that would occur when you're dealing with a 1 to 4 hertz different. Mm-hmm. And some of the research, though, this is not as conclusive, and this is where the science gets. So maybe just in case we start to wind down in time, I'll say for some of the things that the science shows, you know, sometimes it shows things like, oh, it has an effect on depression and so on.
This is the calm range. This is,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But then what I want to say before we run out of time and I forget is most of the articles that I come across say this should not be used on its own. We are not doctors, whichever camera I should be looking at. Disclaimer here.
That's right.
All right. Is that while this can be helpful, it could be helpful between bouts of, you know, speaking to somebody about the professional about the challenges you're having. But it's really interesting from the delta waves are waves that are between 1 and 4 hertz, a frequency of difference there. Yep. And at least some research shows it has an effect on going into deeper sleep for healing, like you were talking about, meditation and cortisol reduction. And we've talked about cortisol before, you recall, right? This is stress hormone. And so then this helps to reduce our overall stress. And I like making connections here. So with my last few moments,
please,
we talked about cortisol and its effect on the part of your brain related to memory.
Yes.
So the hippocampus, when you have too much cortisol, has trouble remembering things. And so it's shown that this delta, these delta waves help to decrease the amount of cortisol in your body. So then there's less impact on your hippocampus.
And more opportunity for memory.
More opportunity for memory via that meditation, maybe that's going along with it. Wow. And might be tied as well to why we tend to remember things so well when we're listening to music, right? You don't tend to forget the words to your favorite song because of the triggering in your mind. There's lots of other, again, waves that we just mentioned, and they have various effects that we don't have time to jump into here. Yeah. But it's something we'll share, I think, later on social media in terms
Absolutely.
Of that.
Some rabbit holes that you can wander down.
For sure.
But with a medical care team, if you're actually using it as
of
medical
course,
advice.
For sure.
Since that is not what we are doing here.
Yes.
Next week, we, as mentioned, are going to be talking more about vibrations. We'll look at ear health, our books and playlists or tools that are mentioned on each week's episodes. You can find on our Instagram account at wellness@DC. Also next week is Oshawa Music Week. So you can follow them on Instagram and learn all about the different musical events and experiences that are coming down the pipes at Oshawa Music Week. And you can also email your questions for us to discuss anonymously on air, wellpod@durhamcollege.ca. And the last song today is just one of our favorites that talks about music. Here is All of My Favorite Songs by Weezer playing us out on riotradio.ca.
My favorite songs are slow and sad. All my favorite people make me mad. Everything that feels so good is bad, bad, bad. All my favorite songs are slow and sad. I don't know what's wrong with me. I need a friend when I take a walk. I like spacing out when somebody talks. I wanna be rich, but I feel guilty. I fall in love with everyone who hates me. All my favorite songs are slow and sad. All my favorite people make me mad, so mad. Ooh.
slow and sad. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know what's wrong.